March 20th, 2009. It's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
It's episode 72 of the Lullabot Drupal Podcast. We get together every couple of weeks and talk about Drupal. I'm Jeff Robbins, and I'm here with...
Angie Byron.
Also...
Addie Berry.
As well as...
James Walker.
And...
Kent Bai.
And last, but certainly not least...
Karen Stevenson.
It's Karen Stevenson!
Woo!
The latest addition to the Lullabot team, Karen Stevenson. You may know her from such modules as CCK, Date Module, Calendar Module, and other awesome things.
Basically, if it's awesome, there's a good chance that Karen wrote it.
She like worked on that date stuff.
Oh,
she's
man.
Like already like I don't know.
Her head is the size of a stadium. It's like-
I knew that Karen was awesome as soon as she started doing the date stuff. I had done some work with event module early on, and trying to just fix some like little bugs with it, and realized very quickly that. Anytime you do any like programming stuff, especially in a very abstracted way, as event module was trying to be, and date module and calendar module are, it's just things just reel out of control so quickly. I mean, you've got the international date line, and you've got it's this time zone here and this time zone here, and you've got daylight savings time, and then people in different time zones. But sometimes people want to all refer to the same time, and sometimes people want to refer to different times. Oh man.
In the end, you just think that everybody
server time zone and the site time zone and your time zone and the user's time zone. And-
yeah, I mean, people meeting virtually want to refer to a common time zone, but if they're meeting physically, then they don't care about time zones. And
then if that wasn't bad enough, you throw daylight savings time in there.
Yeah.
Pop. Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, you can't see me now, but I'm making gang hand signs. Respect, respect.
Yeah, I'd also like to say publicly that Chapter 9 of using Drupal is basically the Karen chapter. It wouldn't be possible without her work.
After they gave me a chapter in the book, I had to come work here.
Yeah.
There you go.
It was the deal. It was the deal. We will attempt to explain the wonderful work you're doing in our book. And I don't know. Anyways, we're really happy to have you both
at
Lullabot and on the podcast as well, because who knows? We may need to coordinate some scheduling, and you can set us straight on.
That's right.
Timestamps, and there's Unix timestamps, and then the Unix timestamps
the
can't
stop
go
the
negative, and then it's different operating systems,
oh,
and then there's
head.
The
easy.
ISO date format, and then those, and how do you even look those? I mean, just
yeah, and then I've got issues about can we do BC time? And oh my god,
it's really
well. You know, everybody wants their Flintstones blog, so you gotta-
Yes, the inherent problems. You think it's going to be easy doing the Flintstones blog, but then you realize...
We can't do BC.
Then you realize.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so we're going to talk about Drupal 7. We've talked for a couple of previous podcasts about the fact that we were going to talk about Drupal 7, and it's here. We're finally going to do it. We're finally going to talk about Drupal 7 in this podcast, and what are the new features, and in particular, sort of how that relates to people who are doing work in Drupal 6 now so that they know that they're kind of... They can lay down their train tracks, and they will join up correctly with Drupal 7 when that comes together. So, but first, we have a couple of hopefully quick announcements. We've got workshops coming up, Lullabot workshops. James?
Yeah, we are headed to Portland, Oregon for some workshops in May. 4th to the 8th, we'll be doing both Drupal theming as well as Drupal module development. Portland, Oregon in May. Should be a lot of fun. Early bird registration is still on now, so make sure you get in and get it while you can.
May 4th through the 8th in Portland, Oregon.
Correct.
We also have workshops coming up in Providence and all of that. Again, lullabot.com/training. We also came out with so DrupalCon happened about 2 weeks ago from us now speaking where we're recording the podcast. The first day of DrupalCon, we came out with new Lullabot training videos. We have a series of, we call them DVDs, but they're also available as downloadable video content that we call the Lullabot Learning Series. And we had one called Understanding Drupal, which was sort of a very overview kind of thing for people who are new to Drupal to kind of explain the glossary of terms and kind of who does what and where does this come from? And mommy, where does Drupal come from? Things like that. And thanks. But we came out with our first tutorial video, tutorial videos, one on CCK. And one on views, and those have been available for download since the beginning of DrupalCon, and people are loving them. They're very popular. We're very excited about them, and we're going to be doing more videos in this series. And we have the downloads are out, and we're pressing up the DVDs, and those will be coming out in the next couple of weeks. But you can go to lullabot.com and click on the store link, or just go to store.lullabot.com and find all the videos there. Again, the new videos are called Learning CCK and Learning Views, and they kind of dovetail one into the other. It's a one project that starts with Learning CCK and then goes through to Learning Views, but you can also watch them individually in there. Modular, you know, like modules. Also, the Do It With Drupal conference that we did in December, we also have videos that people can they can access the video archive from that. It's like 40 plus hours worth of Drupal learning goodness, and those have been selling as well. So don't forget about that stuff. That's at doitwithdrupal.com, There have been rumors about Do It With Drupal 2009. We're not announcing it here now, but, you know.
But let's just say there's a good chance it may be happening.
there's a good possibility of a possibility.
Yes.
Yes. We've got another, what would we call it, sort of a mini podcast, quickies, little podcast quickies, that we're calling Drupal Voices, that will be starting on Monday, daily, podcasts. So at, DrupalCon, Kent went around, and did a whole lot of little interviews with people from all over the Drupal community about what they were doing and what they were interested in, or just little tips and tricks and stuff like that. And we're going to be starting that on Monday. It will likely be a different feed, depending on how you have subscribed to this podcast in your RSS podcast reader catcher thingy. We call it iTunes. You may need to subscribe to that. There'll be an announcement on the site and a link to it and stuff like that. But that starts Monday. All right. Any other announcements? Oh, one other announcement. All this stuff happened around DrupalCon. Addy Berry, our very own Addy Berry, won a grant from the Knight Foundation for documentation stuff. You want to expand on that, Addy, a little bit?
Sure, just real briefly, pretty much was part of the Knight Drupal Initiative. The Knight Foundation has decided that Drupal is such an awesome platform that they want to fund it directly. They normally fund journalism and community journalism projects. so anyway, I put in got a grant to basically help make documentation better so that Drupal's more accessible to the average person out there trying to set up a site. So most of it centered around doing documentation sprints around the world and encouraging the community to do them on their own. So, and actually I'm going to be doing this weekend, actually I'm going up to Toronto. We're doing a planning sprint, which Angie will also be at, and a couple of other sort of people who've been big on doing docs. And then I'm going to actually start using the Knight Grant money in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to be going to Drupal Camp in Galway and then a Drupal Camp in Nicaragua, which is Drupal Camp Central America. And basically starting to basically organize and teach people how to do doc sprinting throughout the community so we can get more people helping get stuff done. And there is also going to be a conference that I've been involved with getting that started, which is called Writing Open Source, which will be up in Canada in June. And there'll be a documentation sprint there as well, but it'll also be a sprint for all open source projects to sort of come together and help each other out as well. So so anyway, that's a whole bunch of stuff I have. I'll put a bunch of links in the podcast notes for people who want more information about that. The sprints that I'll be doing and other people around the community be doing will be listed on the group page for the doc team, which is at groups.drupal.org/documentation-team. But I'll put more links and information in the podcast notes, too.
Awesome. Any other announcements before we dive in?
Where's Galway?
That's in the Green Isles of Ireland.
James, it was just St. Patrick's Day.
Do you know where Nicaragua is?
I do. I actually knew where Galway was.
And you don't actually have any Irish heritage, James, do you?
No, I don't. No, the red hair is all German and Scottish.
Good.
Good.
Because they probably, you know, shun you. Anyways, Drupal 7. Let's talk about Drupal 7 and stop shunning James. All right. So, Angie, for yes. those of you who don't know, is the Drupal 7 co-maintainer. With each version of Drupal, there it is Dries Poitart, a.k.a. the Drupal guy, the founder of the Drupal project, is he works on every version of Drupal. He's the core committer and picks one other person to help out as a core committer. And Angie is the other person for Drupal 7. So, frankly, we couldn't be doing this podcast without her. We would just be...
Oh, that reminds me. I got a thing, so...
We would just be talking out our arses, as the Irish say. And but Angie's here, so, you know, we have a little bit of credibility. So let's start with the easiest question. Angie, when is Drupal 7 coming out?
When it's ready.
Ta-da! Yay!
I'll just go a little bit, I don't want to spend a great deal of time on this, but it's helpful for people to know kind of what happens during a release. So what happens during a release is to release the new version of Drupal. So in this case, the last time we did this, it was Drupal 6. Once we do that, we basically make a copy of it and call it Drupal 7 or head. If you hear developers talking about head, that's what they're talking about. It's the latest development release. And then basically once we do that, we're in what's called a code thaw. And code thaw means that Drupal is a totally blank slate. Anything that ever annoyed you, anything that you think would make Drupal rock even harder, any useful contributed modules that you've seen that you think would be good in the core offering, or anything to do with world domination, essentially, that everything's free game. So you can rewrite the entire menu system like we did in Drupal 6, or you can get in powerful internationalization features like we did in Drupal 6. Anything you want during Code Thaw. At DrupalCon, it was announced that Code Thaw is going to end September 1st. So what that means is that if you have things that you'd like to see fixed in Drupal core, you need to start right now, because once September 1st comes around, then basically we're cut off. There's no more new features. There's no more crazy ideas getting in. Instead, we go into what's called a code freeze. And at that point, we are just focused on bug fixes and then performance improvements and, you know, stuff to basically get us ready for release. So we only fix things that are, you know, majorly broken. And then when we release is when we've fixed all of the critical bugs in Drupal 7 enough so that, you know, the bugs that we know about, and then we release a 7.0 release, and then we go to town from there. So there's speculation that the release date could be as early as December 1st in theory. There will always be a 3-month window for contributed modules to port their module, or contributed authors, sorry, to port their modules and themes and stuff. There's a chance it could be that short because we've done this whole thing with automated testing, which I'll get into later. However, realistically, it's probably going to be, you know, more like quarter one 2009, or it could potentially be quarter five 2009. I know there's no quarter five; it was a joke. But anyway, we don't know because it's going to depend on how many people help out with the bug fixing, how many critical bugs we find that that didn't come up during the release cycle, and that sort of stuff.
So, like I said, an easy question, easy answer. Basically, I guess the answer is, you know, sometime. So why should people care now about what's going into Drupal 7 if it's not out and isn't coming out for a while? I mean, we talk a lot about, oh, you know, get your features in. But there are probably a lot of people listening to the podcast who don't consider themselves to be core, you know, people that work on core, sort of more pragmatic Drupal people, just kind of want to keep up with what's going on. Why should they really care about what's going on in Drupal 7 if they're building Drupal 6 sites today?
Because they don't want to get caught in a dead end.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, mostly, yeah, when you're building a site, particularly if you're building a site that you're going to be responsible for the long term, although you should anyway, because someone will be responsible for it long term, trying to make sort of the best decisions for longevity ends up, you know, coming down to tracking where Drupal's going. And so being aware of what's going on can help you make decisions on Drupal 6 builds that, you know, will set you up for success long term.
The what we call the flexi node problem,
or the category yes. module problem.
Yeah. So we'll fill people in here. So flexi node was a module that sort of was a precursor to CCK. That really was the only way of doing that type of thing back then. So it's not quite analogous to what I'm saying here, but there were a lot of people who built sites using FlexiNode, but there was never a good upgrade path between FlexiNode and CCK. So really the better thing at the time, there was an overlap period where CCK existed and FlexiNode existed, and a lot of people were using FlexiNode because it had been around longer, but really the future was in CCK. And for people that at that time decided to use FlexiNode, they kind of find themselves, like James says, stuck down a dead end. And I think that people keep even upgrading FlexiNode for I think is there a FlexiNode for Drupal 6 now? Because there are so many people who are sort of stuck with that they need to keep upgrading it. But no one these days should start with FlexiNode. And by knowing what the stuff is that's coming up in Drupal 7, I think it can help people who are building sites today to plan out things so that they will be able to upgrade to Drupal 7 easily. And maybe even, you know, upgrade in a way that they're replacing their contributed modules with core features and core modules.
Right. And sort of, I mean, to that end, watching core is very helpful. I mean, you know, sort of because Drupal is so open and has so many contributors, it's sort of a blessing and curse scenario. You know, the blessing is that it's free software. And so if you used FlexiNode, you know, you can help you know, either yourself or there are people, you know, who are also using Flexinode and can help sort of maintain and let that project live on. But it also means there are lots of choices. You know, people sort of new to Drupal will see, you know, Flexinode and they'll see CCK. And it they'll look like they do the exact same thing, and they do very, very similar things. And it may be tough to tell what's going on. And so, you know, keeping track of what's happening in the next version of Drupal core can often sort of dictate where the community may be heading or what's important. And, you know, Drupal core always gets the most attention in the world, you know, because everybody has it, everybody installs it to use, you know, no matter what contrib modules they use, they're using Drupal core underneath. So this podcast is basically to let those who don't spend all day every day tracking Drupal you know, get a sneak peek at what's coming and hopefully to help influence some choices today.
Incidentally, I'm wrong. There's not a newer version of Flexinode, although I have heard rumors. It might be sort of one of those things you have to ask for.
I think in CVS there's five versions.
Actually, some stuff that he needed himself, but like in terms of actually stuff downloading, there's a 4.7 version. The last commits were 2 years ago.
Okay, good.
To the 4.7 branch.
But
so.
But in a similar example, there is a Drupal 6 version for image module.
And I actually helped that happen.
Daddy.
Image module, but isn't that the module you should use for images? There are so many.
It's
people,
got the right name.
So many people.
No,
listening
no, no.
To this
you
podcast.
Want image API, an image field, an image manipulation library.
So let's talk. Let's start with the sir. The general sort of series of patches and modules and stuff that has been referred to as fields in core. Maybe we can sort of start a little bit with the history on this, particularly what went into Drupal 6 to sort of prepare for this. Who wants to tackle that one or start to tackle that one?
I could sure jump in on that one, I think.
Sure.
Fields in core. First of all, I want to do a big shout out to Barry Jaspin and Yves Chedemois, who is the other maintainer of CCK. Those guys have just done an awesome amount of work on fields and core. So I want to make sure they get some notoriety for that. But basically, if you go back, the history is interesting because we've been talking about fields and core since 4.7. And in Drupal 5, it's been sort of leaking into core slowly. Little bits of it. And in Drupal 5, we got custom content types. And we've almost forgotten that back in Drupal 4.7, you didn't have custom content types. If you wanted something that was a little bit different than story, you had to write a module to do it. Yep. You couldn't do it any other way. And so we got custom content types into 5, and that came out of CCK. And then in D6, we hoped to get fields in core in D6, and that didn't happen. But what did happen was we had kind of an extra long development cycle, and we did a lot of work with improving the FAPI, the Forms API, and creating an API for it, and a lot of things like that that were sort of getting ready to move forward. And then now in Drupal 7, now we have fields and core. We have committed. There's code. We had a code sprint. We've got a beginning. It's the API is in core, which means you can write code to create fields, but there's no user interface. You don't have the browser interface that we have with CCK. However, the good news is we are keeping CCK for Drupal 7 up to date, and you can use it. And so that works with head. So you can get the head of CCK and the head of Drupal core, and you have a user interface that looks like the Drupal 6 interface, and you can use this for our new fields in core, and you can actually use it to add a field to a user or whatever you want to do. So that's exciting. It also means you are 100% guaranteed that CCK is going to be ready for Drupal 7 because it's ready now. So that's good news.
Yeah. So that's
hoping to get the UI into core, but I don't know if that's going to happen. A good UI for core is going to be really tough and needs a lot of thought, and I don't know if it's going to get done or if it's not going to get done.
Oh, wow.
What about the form builder that Nate's been working on?
Yeah, that's one possibility, and you know, there's we need to work with QuickSketch or Nate and other people that are interested in this and see if we can come up. We need a really good UI for Core, and so we've got till September. You know, maybe something will get done. Huh. So hopefully it will, but we don't know yet.
So okay,
give Nate a weekend and it'll be fine.
Yeah, for people who haven't seen Nate's form builder, is there a video? He put something up on lullabot.com, an article
there
about it.
Yeah, there's a blog post and a sort of video demo.
Yeah,
there's a on the project page. There's a demo link, and that will go to his actual page, and you can actually play around with it too.
Right. But search for Drupal form builder or Lullabot Drupal form builder, and it'll at least bring you to the Lullabot page that talks about that. So, it's a really neat thing that is very generalized for building, rearranging Drupal forms, but could also be used for fields, as CCK refers to them, and dragging them around in a form and creating new forms. Because that's really just how the end users kind of think of it, is the form. They don't think about it so much like we do, like, well, how is this being stored in the database? And are these multiple value fields and blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. So it's really, really cool. So I guess I didn't realize that the fields, the API for the fields and sort of all of the guts of managing and building the fields has gone into Core, but there's not actually a user interface for it. So it still could be that CCK will be a module that you'll still want to download and install.
Well, CCK is probably going to live on as a module for D7 because there are almost certainly going to be things that will not go into Core. There's a Views integration, there's integration with other contributed modules. That part's never going to go into Core.
Oh, okay.
So we're still going to need something that hooks those things together.
Unless Views goes into Core. Boom, boom, boom.
Well, but even if Views goes into Core, there'll be other things that don't make it into Core. There'll be a CCK. And the other thing that we're going to need CCK for in Drupal 7 is the upgrade path, which is going to be a big issue. You know, right. getting all the existing code upgraded to the new fields. That's going to be the role of the CCK module, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I make a bold prediction?
Yes.
I will predict that a CCK or some sort of form building UI will have to go into Drupal 7.
Because of the profile module.
Well, just because for so many people, I mean, so we saw a similar thing in Drupal 6 with actions and triggers, where, you know, actions were sort of obvious. They, you know, it exposes so much functionality, enables so much for Drupal. Obviously, it'll go in, and the API, you know, sort of came together fairly quickly, and then, you know. But then if, you know, when you have some of these APIs in Core that aren't actually exposed anywhere, it becomes hard to for people to really sort of see the power. And so I would predict that some, you know, it may not be the ultimate and it may not be perfect. But one of the nice things is we're seeing this increasing trend of, you know, splitting the API from the interface, you know, where like Views does it, Actions and Triggers does it. So you have, you know, Actions in Drupal 6 with triggers as an interface for configuring them, and then Contrib has, you know, sort of more advanced or other options as well.
Right. Yeah.
And so that's my bold prediction for
no, I think we all hope that a UI can get there. We just know how big a job that's going to be, even for me. You know, that so I don't want to go out on a limb and say it absolutely will be. There will be a UI. It will either be a UI in Core or there'll be a UI in Contrib. There'll be a UI. It's just, hopefully we'll get it into Core. That'd be great. I also want to mention that already we've got lots of work going on. Barry's working on getting body field converted over to the new field API. There's work going on to do a file field in Core, which will be so super. People have talked about doing taxonomy or profiles as fields in Core. There's work going on to do to add RDF into fields in Core, add real translations to fields in Core. There's a big thread going on about that. User reference and node reference are in CCK head right now that work in Drupal 7. We're not sure. They'll probably go into core, but they're in contrib for right now. So lots of work going on, and it's really kind of picking up steam.
So let's sort of backtrack a little bit. And so what are the fields that are in core now?
Core fields are the basic ones: text, number, option widgets. And then we have a new one called list. We pulled out the list building thing in Drupal 6 in the earlier versions. Was you could do like your allowed values list as a part of the text module or the number module. It's a whole new field now, and that's in core.
Okay, so what are option widgets?
Option widgets are what does your that gives you the option of showing your list as a select list or checkboxes, or you know, gives you the various ways that you can display your list.
Right. So user references and node references are not in core now.
Not yet in core. They're in contrib, they're in D7, and they are functional in D7. So the question is whether they're going to get moved over to core or not. They haven't been yet.
Right. So with some of these things, particularly when we start talking about, it's not probably the way that it will go, but when you start talking about things like user reference and stuff, it quickly starts, you start thinking about profiles, user profiles. And yep. Again, just to sort of recap, with Drupal 6 and Views 2, we now get the ability using views to create views of things that are not nodes, including users and user profiles and
comments, files, everything.
Right. All sorts of interesting things, including even potentially external things, which gets really just makes your mind tingle a little bit. There for a while there was a big push for user profiles to be nodes. And now with views being able to create views of other things, the distinction between things becomes a little bit less distinct. It becomes a little more fuzzy, and so there's a little bit less of a push for that. But certainly the core profile stuff can be is arguably not very efficient from a database standpoint, not necessarily a great way to do this for a really large site with lots of users and lots of profiles being browsed by lots of users. And so there's been talk about sort of reworking that. The only thing in core now that has the ability to add fields onto things is profiles, user profiles. But now we have a better system. The CCK stuff, the fields in core, has sort of leapfrogged the core profile functionality. And so what work is being done to add these fields to profiles and then figure out the inevitable, horrible, horrible hassle of upgrading?
Yeah, that's going to be probably the biggest issue is the upgrade, but all of the upgrade of path for all of this is going to be a big project.
Yeah,
it will get done, but it will be a big project.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, I mean, you can attach fields to users now with the code that's there, and so yeah. So the big task that's left is the migration
If you were starting profile. If you were citing a new site on Drupal 7, you could just put fields on your users and never necessarily care about profile. Now, the profile module does other things. You know, it does some grouping. You know, there's some other functions besides attaching fields. So somebody needs to sort through all that, but somebody will.
Yeah. The interesting thing that happens though is that because profile module has been in core, you know, it's a fairly safe bet that before Drupal 7 launches, the migration. So Dreesen, his keynote at DrupalCon, had a very cute, clever slide of profile module on a gravestone.
Right.
So you know, it's you know, it has been decreed that profile module is already dead. So, yeah. But the interesting thing that means is that prior to Drupal 7's release, getting people using who used profile module in Drupal 6 to a fields based solution in Drupal 7 is you know, I mean, it will happen. Right. So
I would say it will happen. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, so that's sort of an interesting thing. Whereas, you know, some of the node-based things, the, you know, things like content profile in Drupal 6, the migration path is a bit less certain. You know, I mean, from moving, you know, from their CCK-based fields to fields in core will theoretically be handled. But what happens to the, you know, I mean, what content profile does now is basically relates a user record to a node. And how does that get handled, or when does that get handled, I guess is probably the bigger question. Sort of related to that, though, I just have to say, like, I'm super excited. I mean, one of the big problems with profile module in core has always been, you know, its lack of extensibility. That, you know, you got sort of some, and people, you know, moved to a node based solution, which was really just sort of, you know, a clever lack of anything else to do.
Yeah,
but yeah, right. It was just they were constrained, and now that sort of that weight has been lifted. And what I think we're going to see in Drupal 7 moving forward, as someone who's very interested in users and profile data, we're going to see a sort of much richer feature set around users in Drupal. And
exactly,
and that,
well, pretty, I mean, much that, anything you can do on nodes today, you will theoretically be able to do on users. Yeah.
Yeah, which kills a lot of that user. I mean, effectively, very effectively kills all that users should be nodes talk, because
right.
The whole reason people wanted users to be nodes was to get the APIs and the features and the functionality that nodes provided. And so,
yeah. Well, we've already talked about, like, the user image is an image field, and, you know, all these things just become regular fields. The same way that we deal with them on nodes.
But boy, that upgrade path. I mean,
the upgrade path is going to be tricky. Yes.
So for instance, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm only just going from my admittedly hazy memory. that all of the fields are basically text based, which means that if you wanted to ask users what their birthday was, they can type in their birthday, but it basically becomes text, or you can choose numeric, I guess. If you wanted to now upgrade, there's not a good sort of foolproof way to take those text based, you know, so a user might type Jan 16, you know, comma, you know, or they might type it in European date format, or, you know, there's not a current way, certainly not a current way using the core profile stuff to say, here's a list of users who have birthdays in the next week,
right.
Tomorrow, next month.
Am I wrong? The date field for profile was separated into different fields. No, yeah. I don't think that's a particular issue. If you had a text field for birth date, yeah, but then that's your problem.
Yeah,
yeah, I just
You're constrained to an actual date for a date profile field. Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. I'm happy to be wrong, but these kinds of problems where you know, you're taking to try and get richer data out of
right.
out of you know, what are essentially just text fields.
Right.
So
I. It'll be tricky, but even things like where somebody's kept a list in profile module, that list is in a similar format to the way that CCK has done lists. So, you know, I think it'll be doable. We'll find out what we run into, but
well, at minimum, you can convert one to one. You can convert it from what it used to be, a text field, into into another text field. So
right. Right.
Yeah, the one thing that the profile module has that we don't currently have is stuff like you can free tag, essentially. I guess if we make taxonomy a field, then we could do that.
Right.
But you know how you can have interests and you type in a list and then it links off to other users who also have that interest. So there's a couple of like kind of crazy things that profile module does. The other thing is it makes like different sub-tabs in the user profile page, which most of the time I spend most of my time working around that behavior, but it doesn't, and people might be depending on it, so we need to build some sort of facility for adding sort of sub-forms, if you will,
And that's sort of similar to the core profile that has categories and adds tabs.
Yep, exactly.
It's going to be the same kind of an issue, I think, figuring out how that's all going to transition into D7.
But when the dust settles, what we're going to end up with is we're going to end up with one single way for you to describe fields that your module, exposes to, users, nodes, whatever, whatever we make fieldable, if we want to make comments fieldable, if we want to make taxonomy terms fieldable, you no longer have to write all this special casing stuff. Well, if it's a comment, then you need to do this, and if it's a node, you need to do that. You just make the field, and then people can do whatever they want with it.
I should just explain what fieldable means, because that's sort of our new terminology with the fields and core is when we wanted to figure out how do we hook things to users and nodes and whatever else, how do we do that? And the concept that we ended up with is objects can declare themselves to be fieldable. So node declares itself to be fieldable, and therefore you can put fields on it. And user declares itself to be fieldable, and therefore you can put fields on it. And so basically any object in the Drupal ecosystem could potentially declare itself to be fieldable, and it can then get fields.
Yeah. What's really interesting about this is, so in Drupal 5, nodes were all the rage, because views in Drupal 5 only could show lists of nodes. So we had this whole movement towards comments as nodes, and users as nodes, and taxonomy terms as nodes, and everything as nodes. We saw in Drupal 6 that views became more powerful and more generalized and could now make lists of basically anything, as long as it sat in an SQL database, and there's even work being done so that that isn't even a requirement anymore. But what we're going to see in Drupal 7 is we're going to see basically nodes becoming totally irrelevant, and fields becoming the primary thing.
That's exactly what I think. And somebody did a thing on groups.drupal.org like a couple of years ago and said, it's not everything is nodes, it's everything is fields.
Yeah.
At the field level.
Anyway, if you want to help Drupal 7 and the sites that you can build with Drupal 7 just launch into the stratosphere in terms of what's possible, this is really the very best place for you to focus your energy on right now. There's a nice page. One thing we're doing is we're kind of centralizing all of the work going on in Drupal core so that people who want to know what's going on can go to one place to find out. So that's at drupal.org/community-initiatives/Drupal-core. And then there's a bunch of things under that list, like accessibility, design improvements, and fields APIs, one of those things. And Barry Jaspin has that page laid out really nice. He's got like priorities, and he's got sort of relative difficulty levels on all of those issues. So jump in there and see if there's something that you can help with. It'll give you a big head start on learning this stuff that you're going to have to know within a year, for sure, at some point, and it'll give you a heads up on that. You'll be able to work directly with the, field module maintainers and stuff, and there's so much there that's possible. One thing that we talked about, and I can't really, say this is going to happen or not, but we've had huge discussions on IRC lately about views in core and what that would mean and what that would look like and how hard it is and stuff like that. And what we eventually realized, this was David Strauss and Earl had a discussion, I think, on Sunday about this, is that if we move everything to fields in core, then suddenly views becomes a whole lot simpler because
everything's a field.
Because everything's a field. So all views has to do is work with fields, and then everything just magically works. Mm-hmm. So this would allow us to effectively put the API part of views into core as fields, essentially. Because fields are exposing widgets. They're telling you how the data is stored in the database. They're telling you how data relates to other data in the case of node reference and user reference and taxonomy and stuff like that. And it would allow us to put a huge chunk of views into core without locking in the really innovative parts like plugins and the user interface and stuff like that, which would be a shame to lock up for 3 years and not allow any improvements in. I think it, you know, they're you know, we'll see what happens with that, but there's some really big potential. So yeah, basically the message to get out there is that if you have PHP coding chops, you know, jump in here and, you know, see if there's something that you can take on. You know, it's a really exciting area, and Drupal 7 could just be mind-blowing in terms of what it allows for, you know, crazy mashups and, like, you know, just everything. It's just going to, it's really a fundamental sort of paradigm shift that's going on right now.
You're blowing my mind.
Blowing your mind.
Wow. Yeah. That's, it's funny, these little changes, and all of a sudden you sort of realize, like, whoa, everything's different.
Yeah.
This will be huge.
Yeah.
When this all settles in and is working, it's going to just be huge.
Wow. All right. Well, let's talk about image handling, files and file field and stuff like that. So we sort of had mentioned that user profile pictures could be a field, but that would, of course, require some image handling in core and image fields and stuff like that. Are we getting that? Is that happening?
So I can talk about this.
Sounds happy.
Although really, Nate should be talking about this because Nate and Andrew Morton, aka Drewish, are really sort of driving this. But let's go back in time a little. Back at the very first DrupalCon in 2000 and something, five maybe, you know, that was really where, you know, John and John Schaefer got, you know, in a basement, and a bunch of us were there talking about CCK. And at the time, I was working on image module and working on a bunch of distributed identity that needed better profile type stuff, and working all these things on all these things that were not specifically node related, and could really make use of, you know, something like CCK being in core, and could really benefit from thinking of Drupal as field level. And so now that, you know, 4 years later, we're finally there, you know, we've sort of opened the door for all kinds of cool things to happen. And with images specifically, one of the long sort of the longstanding problems is there's all sorts of levels, you know, levels of importance where people use images. And so image module, you know, sort of took one stance and said, you know, this is good for images as primary content. So something like a photo sharing site, or if you're posting screenshots or something where really your content is the, you know, is the image itself. Image module is great for that. But what, you know, people have increasingly wanted to do with images is just have an image with a bunch of other fields. And so sort of, you know, so it's always been sort of assumed that, you know, we get to this place where, you know, where an image was just another field. And so now that fields in core has happened, we've got this sort of room where, and what we're seeing is that files, and so images are sort of largely driving this, but files in general, so any binary data, whether it's, you know, an image or, you know, an MP3 audio or video file, or a PDF, or, you know, any sort of non-textual data, is starting to, you know, be able to have more importance. So we talk some about, you know, files becoming sort of first order objects, and because things are switching, as we said, away from, you know, nodes as the full content and more towards fields, you know, we can have files as fields and images as fields, and they can be used everywhere. They can be used as part of the nodes. They can be the most important thing in a node, as far as you're concerned, or they can be, you know, the user profile. And so it's sort of that playing field leveling that Fields in Core is doing, is allowing a lot richer image stuff to go in core. But some of the stuff that's already gone in is actually even a bit lower level than that. So rounding out some of the core image manipulation stuff, which there's always been some of in core, but it hasn't been very extensible. And so things, so people use the image cache module for building, sort of complex image manipulations. You know, you take an uploaded photo and you want to resize it to a certain size and crop it, and maybe apply a sepia tone or something. All these kinds of things that people like to do with images. They've been using image cache, and so Nate and Andrew and some other folks have been working hard at making sure the core sort of image stuff, what's been known in Contrib as image API, is in Drupal, so that any module can make use of that without having to rely on Contrib, and then sort of building to from there. So yeah, it's very exciting stuff, and like I said, it's awesome to see 4 years later to have so much of this. It feels like the floodgates have opened, and so much of this is possible and easy. And I don't know. I'm excited.
So I've discovered. So I've narrowed it down at one point to three different ways that people want to insert images into their, think of when they think of adding an image in a content management system, in Drupal in particular, there are three different ways that they mean that. One way, the probably sort of going from most common to probably least common, it's hard to say, but the most common way I would say is to insert an image into the content of a body of something, which is how most blogging software works, right? You can upload an image and it goes into a directory, and then you just insert the image tag into the body of your blog post or whatever it is. So that's one way. Then the second way is as a field. Right, so there's a field, and you say attach an image as the thumbnail of this post, or as the album cover for this album, that kind of thing. And then the third way is the image module type way, where basically the image is the post, a la Flickr. And maybe there's extra information such as a description or something like that. What do we have now? Which of those three do we have? Arguably the second two, the as a field of a content and as the content itself, there's a very gray line between those. I mean, those could be bulked together into one thing. So, let's say they're two different things. What do we have?
Well, what I would say is that what's happened is those two have sort of officially merged into one case. And the thing is they're so functionally they're sort of the same thing, right? And even sort of as it's always existed, image module just defined its own field that was a series of fields that was the image. It was, you had the original uploaded image and then a bunch of resized versions for various contexts. Right. So what happens now is that all, and the only difference was image module didn't use CCK's field infrastructure because it predated it by several years, and it sort of assumed that field, the image field, was sort of the most important part of your node, and so basically those two cases have gone away by having by the shift of Drupal to thinking more at a field level as opposed to the node level, that sort of collapses those two cases into one. And you can have an image that is sort of the only content that's part of your node, or you can have it as more sort of the album cover type scenario. The interesting one that you said is probably the most important is still sort of is not directly handled by a bunch of this. But one of the sort of interesting things is, when you talk about people, I mean, the example we always use is people want to just embed an image as part of their blog post. And the thing that happens there is you know, people, so one of the first, particularly for very, very new users on the web, one of the first things that they recognize is that they can't just, you know, they can't just put an image from their desktop into the photo or into the blog post and have it work.
I wonder how many new users have literally just tried to drag something from the desktop into a post. I mean, that seems like the common way that you would think, you know, that you would want to do it.
Exactly. So I mean, and so having maintained Image Module for a long time and even going back further and working on the gallery project, the answer is a lot. Right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because it sort of is intuitive. And one of the first things that people have to sort of adjust to is that, you know, your image, when you see an image in a blog post, the image isn't in a real way embedded in that blog post, right? What's in that blog post is an image tag that references another file. Right, or references another URL. And so that means a couple things. You know, so just making that realization for people sort of says two things. First of all, that image has to be on the internet somewhere, right, which means it has to sort of be uploaded from your hard drive or from your camera onto the internet. And that, you know, what you're doing is the process of embedding is really just creating a link between the post that you're creating and the other image wherever it's located. So, you know, so to sort of address that, you know, what you said is the most common case. You know, people do all kinds of things, right? Some people upload their photos to Flickr and just embed, you know, a link to the image on Flickr inside of their blog post. And, you know, usually the complicated part is how does that process work? And I think, you know, in terms of from an image field standpoint, so Image Module has for several releases now come with a module called Image Attach, which is actually on Drupal.org, which basically lets you say this, you know, this image module handled image that I've uploaded is attached to this blog post or on Drupal.org, attached to this project page. And that's sort of one easy way. So the actual uploading of the image, any management of that image is just an image module image, right? So we, you know, in Drupal 7, we can say that's just an image field, right? Somewhere and you know, and so what the complication becomes, how does the user upload that image field or create that image field content? But we can do things like in the blog post have a multiple valued image field where people can just say, you know, if you want images attached to this post, and people do this with upload module now, you can just, you know, attach a bunch of images to this post. Or you may want to have something sort of more like a central asset library where, you know, you upload a bunch of images to the central asset library. And then the final trick is how do you actually, you know, what's the best way for you to do this embedding, you know, create the image tags. And I think a lot of that work will probably come through the WYSIWYG API and the work going on with, you know, enriching the WYSIWYG experience in Drupal. I don't know. It's tough to say from here where that will or will end up in terms of whether or not it'll be in core. But, you know, that process of taking an image that has made it to the internet and putting it inside, you know, quote unquote, inside of the content of another field is, you know, sort of another problem.
So I really like, I think I've mentioned this in the past on the podcast, but there's a module out there called IMCE that I really like for inserting images. It was originally written as a sort of image handler Drupal thing for Tiny MCE, hence the MCE. I think it was images for MCE, whatever MCE stands for. And it now works without it, so you don't need to actually use TinyMCE in order to use IMCE. And it's a really nice that like you're saying, sort of a central library of images, at least central per user. I think it can be set up in a number of different ways. It's a little bit tricky to set up. In a perfect world, it would work a little bit easierly. It would just kind of work. But I like IMCE. I don't know if that's our tip. We're starting a new thing at the end of the podcast. We do a tip of the week. And I don't think IMCE is our tip, but it's a little extra tip and a half. We've got a whole bunch of other things on this list. Let's kind of just sort of whip through some of the other ones. So you mentioned, James, and we need to follow up on it now because you mentioned it, WYSIWYG in Core. Yeah. People, I know a lot of people listen to the podcast, their ears went, what? So anybody want to? Yes?
The quick version is no one's working on it. There's a lot of work that's been done to put the underlying API facility so that you could do WYSIWYG in Core, but I'm not aware of anybody taking that on. So you want to see in Core, now's the time.
Yeah, I will just say, sort of to add to that, the work that's been done has been largely around making it easier for, you know, for WYSIWYG tools to integrate with Drupal. I would be really reluctant to predict that so with WYSIWYG, there's lots of JavaScript based libraries that handle the actual WYSIWYG part. So there's TinyMCE, which we mentioned, but there's also FCK editor, YUI, the Yahoo library has one, or seven others that I always forget when asked. But they all have sort of similar problems in that, particularly around things like input formats in Drupal, you know, so that they're not, you know, exposing buttons to do things on your site that input formats are just going to strip out again anyway. So the work that has happened is basically giving those tools an API so that they work better for people. There's not as much configuration and conflicting configuration that happens with those. But yeah, like Angie said, it's a project that it is in contrib. I think it's drupal.org/project/WYSIWYG, which of course is spelled WYSIWYG.
What you see is what you get.
Yeah. So if people are interested and passionate about that, that would be the place to start. But yeah.
Let's talk about usability. With each version of Drupal, we say, we're focusing on usability. And then the new version comes out and people still say, meh. So what's happening around all that? It's getting, with each version, the torch gets even brighter.
One thing that I will say is in the past, when we say we're going to focus on usability, what we actually mean by that is once code freeze is done, remember we talk code freeze, all the features are done, then we'll focus on usability. What happens is then, okay, well, we can make little incremental improvements, and actually Nate got drag and drop in last time after code freeze, which actually ticked a whole bunch of people off. But anyway, it's like, it was basically like you were pretty limited in what you could do because, you know, it's like all the APIs are locked down. So it's like, well, yeah, you can rename that button, but, you know, no, you can't, like, totally redo the admin panel. Sorry. So what has been the shift that's happened this release is we knew right at the beginning of when development opened up for Drupal 7 that we had a lot of usability problems, because there was a usability real life usability testing that happened at University of Minnesota back in February of 2008, and so we had this data and what that caused is it caused a lot of people to kind of take usability seriously from the beginning of the release, and we actually have what I would term as a usability team now, which we've never had before. We've had a couple of individuals who really passionate about usability, but we never had like a group of them together really working on some of these hard issues. So a lot of the minor sort of usability problem, relatively minor ones, have been addressed. So you'll see a lot of really nice, you know, incremental improvements in Drupal 7. Like, for example, the input format thing at the bottom of the text field used to be this huge gaping, you know, thing that scrolled on and on and on. Now it's just a nice little, you know, styled thing right below the text area. It tells you what format you're using. And there's a little drop down, and you can choose a different one. And it has the formatting rules right there and stuff.
It's been changed to text format.
Yeah, it's been changed to text format because input format made no sense to anybody. There's been relocation of a lot of stuff. We moved the content types under site building instead of managed content because people couldn't.
That confused people in our testing.
Oh, no! Did it confuse people again?
Because they expected to find everything about content under content management.
Under content. Oh, that's fine. So we're still kind of looking through.
But this is the point of continuing to do testing.
Right, exactly, yeah. So the usability team has done some ad hoc usability testing in DrupalCon Szeged. They did also another formal usability. So I should probably shut up and let Addie talk about this, actually. You guys did another usability study just right before DrupalCon, right?
Yeah, we did another test. And again, like Andrew was saying, like, the thing is to do this testing while the code is still malleable. And so we tried some stuff out that's actually not in, it wasn't in head yet. We're like, these are patches, we think this is a good answer, but do they actually play out well? And so that we could actually see like real life experience and have that inform the decision if we're going in the right direction or not and be able to change direction. We came up with a bunch of new stuff that can happen, but we still now have time to get those fixes in based on the testing. So it was really awesome. Found a lot of things. Again, every time we do this like in-person real testing with people and we capture it all, and when we go to a DrupalCon and we actually show it to people, it sort of like smacks everybody in the face again. And it's like, yeah, no, really, we still have things we need to do. So that is, you know, a ton of work came out of that, and there's plenty to still do. And we're gonna, I think some people are actually looking to try and figure out how we can try and do more sort of ongoing remote testing, because the usability lab testing is awesome, but it's also can be very expensive, and it's sort of time consuming to get people together and yada yada. So hopefully we'll see some more of that as we go. But still, the amount of work and focus and time that we've done this time with real, you know, testing of the code while we can change it has been just huge, huge, big difference, I think.
So Mark and Lisa, am I pronouncing her name correctly? Lisa, from Mark Bolton Design, markbolton.co.uk, have also been working on directly on Drupal 7. They are best known for doing the new design of Drupal.org that is not actually the... It's not launched yet. Yes, it's the new design. That's not actually the new design because it hasn't actually launched yet. Although the design is done, the work is being done to convert the site over. But now they're doing some work directly on Drupal 7, sponsored by Acquia. And so what's, do we know much about that? I mean, I assume that will just sort of go into a lot of the sort of in the same way that this user testing is happening, this stuff will sort of inform Drupal and the Drupal development in those same sort of ways. Yes?
Yeah, so I had a chance to talk to Mark and Lisa at the DrupalCon and actually did some podcast, Drupal Voices podcast interviews with them. They'll be playing within the next couple of weeks or so. But basically, they are tasked with the user experience of Drupal 7, which is a little bit different than usability. Usability is a part of user experience, but user experience is sort of a bit broader and sweeping changes. So they're going to be really looking at improving like big things as opposed to like little usability things that are like on the small patch level. So the analogy that Mark used is the usability is sort of like the trees in the forest, and he's focusing on the forest and the overall ecosystem of Drupal 7. So
just burn the entire forest to the ground.
There was a thing at South by Southwest last week where you know Drupal and WordPress and Joomla were put head to head on this project, and the people who actually tested the site, who had never dealt with any of these, and they were end users and stuff, actually preferred Drupal's administrative interface to any of the other ones. So I just want to throw that out there. That's a data point. That was hilarious. And no, we don't need to burn the whole forest down, but we can maybe do some pruning here.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that, I think, is that it could be that it was sort of initial users, and there's a lot of text. And so in some ways it's easy to sort of search for text, but for people who use it day in and day out, it's sort of a different experience. So.
Yeah. Well, also, so having just sat in on that session at South by Southwest and listened to sort of the report back, one of the things they also said was that, so Drupal and WordPress was the one that got sort of slammed for its admin UI, ironically, because it usually gets praised for its admin UI. But one of the things they said was that, you know, the order that was tested may have actually had an influence, because the order that the testing happened was Drupal, Joomla, then WordPress, and basically the users were sort of potentially, you know, having never used any of them, they were two systems where they could just make all of their edits and things like that in line with the rest of the site, and then the last one with WordPress, you know, to make an edit, they were sort of swept away into this secret back end that was completely different. And we've all seen usability tests that said sort of the exact opposite, that they, you know, didn't realize, if they were in a standard Garland Drupal install, they didn't realize that the edits they were making were actually the real site. They thought they were in sort of a back end that they needed to then do something different to actually publish it to the real site. So, I mean, it's interesting in usability stuff like that, how things like that can sort of influence their impression and their understanding of what's really going on.
What else do we have on the list here? This is a long list, and the podcast is getting long. But we'll try and sort of whip through theme changes. We're seeing yet more theme changes. We saw a lot of theme changes in Drupal 6. Exciting stuff for those of us who do theming. Yet more? Anyone want to?
Yeah, there's a lot more. For one thing, there are no more ugly themes in core.
Oh, great.
Unless you consider
and there will be no more ugly themes in Drupal. All of the Drupal.
Totally. Yep.
No
all
more
of the
ugly Drupal.
Themes are all fun. we have a new kind of design team that's come out of DrupalCon DC, and we've had a few people working on patches to move a lot of Xen into core in terms of cleaning up our default templates, so that by default core will just output sensible markup that makes sense. And will allow people to basically create a theme that's just a .info file and some CSS. And that's it. We still have all the power that was given to us in Drupal 6 and stuff like that. But it's really enabling more designers to get involved with a much lower overhead, not having to learn PHP and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, having a theme that's just very, well, there's the new theme called Stark, and it's super stark. And for anyone that's a designer CSS person, although Drupal has come with these themes like Garland that have a lot of stuff that they, you know, designed kind of thing. If your job is to undo all of that, it can often be very, 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 very frustrating, and so it's nice that we're now coming out with something that's much more cleaner, has very little, and it's basically just add your stuff to it.
Yeah, Also on the front end side of things, we've got jQuery 1.3 in core now.
Mm-hmm.
And we've made changes so that you can use jQuery with other libraries now. And this is something you can do even in Drupal 6. There's a snippet on the module updates page, which will be in the links of the podcast, I'm sure, that lets you basically wrap any jQuery in two lines of code. And then all of a sudden, jQuery can be used if you want to use prototype or you want to use MooTools or you want to use something else that uses the dollar sign. It doesn't conflict with it that way. So that's a really important improvement because, I mean, we have swappable password hashing algorithms. We ought to have a swappable JavaScript backend. So anyway, I thought that was a good improvement as well.
Cool.
There's also a bunch of improvements to Drupal Add JS and Drupal Add CSS is coming to have like actual weights instead of like this weird module theme core distinction. Getting, you know, just allowing alteration of JavaScript and CSS. It's just all kinds of really fun, cool stuff in the you know, the front end library type of stuff. I guess there's two more things that I really wanted to hit on. One other thing that kind of comes on the front end is RDF. We have support for RDFA in core, which I don't know a lot about what that means. I'm going to defer to someone else.
Kent, you wanted to talk about RDFA. You want to jump in on that one?
Yes, sure. So the RDF is basically like in taxonomy right now in Drupal core, it automatically generates like RSS feeds and you don't even like realize it. And it's sort of analogous to that. It's like an open standard that is producing sort of stuff on the back end that is just providing information to search engines and it basically adds more semantic contextual information. Basically, what that will mean is that with fields and core, you'll be able to add more sort of context to the information that you're putting out there that will allow search engines to sort of scrape that information. And when you're searching for stuff, it'll sort of be more smarter about getting search engine results. The other thing is that you can start to use stuff like Sparkwool and communicate between websites and do various different visualization stuff with Exhibit. I did a whole series of podcast Daily Voices interviews with people at DrupalCon. We've got enough to basically last a week talking much more in depth about that. But it's pretty exciting that we can start sort of giving more sort of metadata to it's like food for machines is what Boris Mann called it.
Machine food now in Drupal 7. PHP 5 only, no more PHP 4. It's about time. Which means that new programming methods, new modules can be written expecting certain things. That was sort of always the thing with PHP 4, particularly around like XML parsing and some sort of newer technologies like that. It really is nice for developers to be able to depend on Drupal requiring PHP 5, and that's finally happening in Drupal 7.
Now, it also enabled us to have time zone support in core. Yay!
There
so that's nice.
Yeah. Dibting. DBTNG. What's DBTNG?
DBTNG is database, the next generation. what it is it's a, speaking of PHP 5 and stuff it allows us to do, it's a totally object-oriented database framework. So if you're listening out there, this is going to affect you if you do any kind of queries of any kind. You have to rewrite them all. Yay! However, the syntax is not actually too bad. You basically just copy paste and then, you know, make the same change everywhere.
Drupal, it's not too bad.
No, actually, there's work going on with the coder module maintainers to allow coder module in Drupal 7 to automatically update modules mm-hmm. as much as it can.
Wow.
So that's really exciting news. But that's a whole separate conversation. But basically, we acknowledge that there's an upgrade path pain. Point, and we're doing whatever we can to make that easier in Drupal 7 because Drupal 7 is going to be a fantastic release. But the high point of what DBTNG allows us to do is do stuff like master-slave replication in core instead of having to do crazy hacks like we had to do before. Transaction support, so that's important if you're using like you know a more advanced database system like InnoDB backend for MySQL or Postgres. It can support either all of a query succeeding or none of it, instead of, you know, sometimes you get this half working, not working, and then you have no idea what happened thing, which is not fun. So there's that kind of stuff. We also killed hook DB rewrite SQL. It's now hook query alter, and you actually get a query you can actually alter instead of having to use regular expressions and all this other insane things, because all we had before was strings to operate on. So basically, everything that anyone has ever complained about databases is better in Drupal 7. We also have SQL Lite support as one of the things, and we have actual working Postgres support in Drupal 7. We've built a team to manage that, so that's been really exciting. And then one other thing that I really want to talk about, and I know we've been talking too long already, but it's really important, is automated testing, because this was something that is new in Drupal 7. Drupal 7 ships with a module called SimpleTest, and I don't know, 13,000 tests currently as we speak. And what this has allowed us to do is it's really revolutionized our core development process. In the past, if somebody had a patch reviewer had to come along and then basically click on forms and click on this and make sure that you can still log in and make sure you can still create a content type, and what if you tag that, and da, 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 da. And so reviewing a patch was basically like a 3-hour long process if you did it right. So nobody did it right. So they just did kind of a half-assed sort of look over of it, and then they said, yeah, sure, that looks great. And so we'd break head all the time, and then when head was broken, developers couldn't work, and it was just sort of a big freaking mess. The automated testing that's gone into Drupal 7 has a baseline, so we know that no matter what we do, we are never going to break the node add form again, ever. We're never going to break the user registration process ever. We're never going to break anything that we have test built for. We're never going to break that stuff again. The other thing that we have is we have an automated testing robot that runs the tests for us and comes and pings back to the issue queue and says, hey buddy, that patch that was fine a week ago no longer applies. You should re-roll that and get that back in there again. It's been amazing because the old workflow again was like, I uploaded a patch, now I wait 3 months for someone to look at it, and when they finally do, it no longer applies, and I don't know until months down the road, and now you just get pinged back immediately.
So it means that particularly core patches, that the whole process of working on core will be much more efficient and more bulletproof, more enterprise ready?
Yeah, it should mean that we don't have this situation where we have like 30-month code freezes because we're trying to work out all the kinks, like what happened with the Drupal 4.7 to 5 release and stuff like that. Because we know that the basics are working. So if there's still bugs, then that means that they're edge cases, and we'll write tests for them so we don't have them again. And there you go.
Cool. All right. Well, there's a few other just sort of things that we'll touch on and probably talk about again more in future podcasts. There's a new help system stuff that's going in. Advanced help, Earl Miles' advanced help, or parts of that.
Something along those lines. It won't be what advanced help is in core.
It won't be not as advanced.
It'll just be different. I mean, in terms of like how things end up sort of, whatever, in terms of some technical stuff and blah blah blah, but that was sort of the impetus for the work that's happening in the core queue right now, and there's still work going on with that. We don't actually have it in yet, but it's been a lot of ideas and a lot of work that's gone in for a while, so hopefully we'll be getting that in soon.
Yeah, and just to sum up, the main problems with our current help system is A, everything is module based instead of topic based. B, when you get there, there's no search, you can't search the help. Also, when the documentation writers want to actually write help, what they're doing is they're editing PHP code in a module file somewhere. So this system changes it so that they're writing HTML files, which can then be translated and can be shared, can be uploaded, can be put on Drupal.org, so that instead of Drupal.org having an entire handbook that's, the documentation, it can just be included with the module and stuff like that. So there's a lot of, there's a lot of good stuff there, and I really want to see at least most of that in core, but, hopefully a lot of it.
And hopefully getting the underlying, a solid underlying system in will allow us to do some really cool things in the future with documentation generally for Drupal. So it's not just when you want to look at help text in Drupal, you know, for your module, it'll be a little bit different. It's going to open the door for a lot of really, really cool stuff.
Yeah. Pictures, maybe.
Maybe embedded videos, maybe, ooh, you know, maybe yeah. Synchronizing Drupal, you know, Drupal.org handbook information with your local offline Drupal
institution. Oh, now you're just talking crazy.
Yeah, see? That's me. I'm crazy talker.
So we talked about several things here that I'm sure for at least some people listening made them go, I would love to see that happen, and maybe they might even like to help. How can they help if they wanted to jump in and work on some of these Drupal 7 things before September 1st?
Again, the place where we're kind of coordinating all this is drupal.org/community-initiatives/drupal-core. And there, anybody who wants to, if you've got a particular itch that you're willing to take the lead on scratching, you know, make a subpage there and say, this is the stuff that we're working on. Here's a list of, you know, issues related to that. And, you know, similarly, if you, you know, you just kind of want to learn more about core and how it works, you can jump in there. We've got a bunch of people very eager to help impound Drupal if you have any kind of issues getting a development environment set up or anything like that. There's also, you know, you can kind of get there, like the filtered list of these are the most high priority patches in the queue right now if you want to try and jump in a place that would make a big difference. One other place that we have is drupal.org/patch/novice. Patch/novice is the sort of the jump off point. We have this new issue tagging system that's relatively recent. And so what we've been doing is kind of going through, and if we find something that's like pretty easy to solve, like it might be a line or two of code, or a documentation fix or something like that, we tag it as novice. And then, so if you're brand new to contributing and patching and you want to kind of, you've heard about it, it sounds fun, you want to know how to get started, that's a great place to jump in as well. If you just go into pound Drupal on irc.freenode.net and you say, hey, I'm looking to get started with this patch, can someone give me a hand? You'll have about 300 people swarm all over you saying, yes, what do you want? What do you need? You know, so.
How to get popular.
There you go.
Yeah. All right, cool. So that's our Drupal 7 coverage. If anybody has anything to add or comments on it, please come comment on the podcast page on lullabot.com. This is episode number 72 again. And we have a new little feature that we'll do at the end of the podcast, the Lullabot Tip of the Week.
Lullabot Tip of the Week.
And this week, our tip comes from Addison Berry.
Ooh, sorry. that mute thing. Darn it. Mute. Yeah, so anyway, what I wanted to talk about real quickly, just to wrap up, is the demo module. So it's at drupal.org/project/demo. When you get there, the full name of the project is Demonstration Site, and it's by Sun. And the reason I was using this, and it's very cool, is that it basically lets you set up a website and then have it automatically like wipe and reset the database periodically for you, so that people can basically come, they can play with your site, they can completely mess it up, and then you just wipe it back to its pristine state again. And I started playing with that because I wanted people to test the some of the help patches, the new help system. And a lot of it's really good to get a lot of you know, feedback from non-technical people on features or things that are happening, or be able to play around with something. And so having kind of requiring them to actually, you know, figure out patches and install a patch and all that stuff is, you're not going to get the feedback you want. So I actually just set up a site and I gave people administrative access to the site, not full administrative access, but I set it up so they can get to the modules page. And then, you know, every hour it would just, the interface for it gives you a little place that you can take a snapshot of your database. So you set it up all nice and clean the way you want. You say, take a snapshot now. And you can label that. And then you can set up the interval that you want it to reset. And you say, I want you to use, you know, this snapshot, and I want you to reset it to that one every hour. And you can go back in, like I would go back in and change or update something, and then I could take a new snapshot of the database and just tell Demo to use that new snapshot. And then it would just keep cleaning it out and stuff. So Very, very cool mod.
So you wouldn't actually give users the user ID 1 access because then they would be able to go in and turn off the demo
right.
module. But if you gave them like access to a role that had all of the permissions except for turning on and off the demo module, then they could really go in there and kind of experiment with the Drupal site. And
obviously, you don't want to let them set user permissions because then they could go.
Oh, that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, you have to think about it. And I think in most instances, like that, you know, I was trying to show things that were happening in the admin interface, so I needed to sort of open things up pretty widely. But you really do need to think about it. I was giving people access to the modules page. I removed the PHP module entirely from the installation so people couldn't even turn that on or figure out how to turn that on and then start writing PHP into content and stuff. So that's, you know, and
you can also use it for like internal stuff. I used it in my demo for date and calendar, and I think people got as excited about that as they were about date and calendar because you could set up multiple snapshots. So I could, you know, go get to a certain point and take a snapshot and then do a bunch of other things and get to another point and take a snapshot. And then I could just jump around in my demo and go right from one snapshot to another. Okay, here's my snapshot with all this stuff set up. And here's a snapshot with all this other stuff set up. And so you can use it in lots of different ways. It was really cool.
Another thing, too, that's actually, you can also get another, there's a demonstration site install profile, and what it'll do is that way you can use one of the snapshots that demo module takes, you can actually use that in an installation profile.
Whoa!
When you create a new site, you just run that snapshot, and it'll do, yeah, it's really cool stuff. And Sun, and I also have to give a huge shout-out to Sun, because I wanted to use this. This is core patches I was using it on, and so he upgraded it to Drupal 7 for me. And so head is upgraded to cores unstable 4, I think. But he did that for me just so that I could use it for this project. So he's also just a really awesome guy and a really responsive maintainer. So
his modules and stuff are really good. Daniel Kudwin, I think, is...
Kudwin.
Kudwin, there you go, German. Yes, I don't pronounce those. But his first name is Daniel.
Yes. And one more thing related to Drupal 7, because you brought it up. If you want to start porting your module now, there are unstable releases if you do a CVS checkout of head. If you want to port it against something that's not moving every day, I encourage you to try. It should be, you know, all the module steps are enumerated at drupal.org/update/modules, and Coder is coming along in terms of being a tool, but you know, give it a shot. Tell us what you thought, because there's still plenty of time to change it. So thank you. I've shut up.
Cool. We will put
the end of the public service announcement.
We will put up what I'm guessing will be a long list of links on the podcast page for this podcast, and we will see you next time. Again, we've got the new little quickie podcasts, Drupal Voices, which will come out much more regularly, sort of a daily podcast, little podcasts starting next week. And we will continue to do these big lumbering. How long is this podcast?
An hour
and a half long podcast as well for those of you that enjoy big lumbering podcasts. And we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.